You thought it was going to be different again, didn't you? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. And before anyone complains in the comments section that I've done that intro before, that's exactly the point. Welcome to episode 656 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And this is one of the big ones of the year. As tradition, here on Motorsport 101, it's time for our Indy 500, the story so far podcast. We'll talk a little bit about qualifying, we'll run down the grid, and make our official picks for the biggest race of them all, the 500-mile, 110th running of the Indianapolis 500, now featuring a Canadian Grand Prix aftermath show. Hey, maybe we'll get Rob Gronkowski to fly over for that one too. So that'll be after 500, of course, on that weekend. So yes, all of that and more coming up in the next hour or so. And well, if you're a video fan, you've probably already noticed this, but this is a four-person pod. Yeah, the whole gang is here, and Chris DeHardy snuck into my hand luggage, so he's now here as well. So from frontstretch.com, it's Chris DeHardy. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Dre. I have to say, this May is so much different than last year. You know, we do all of our serious work at the track, you know, the drivers do their work, you know, driving, doing their feedback and things like that. We do all of our work in the media center and all, but just, it's just not the same without the Pacers playing at night. I hate it so much. There's something missing about it because we all have so much fun, but
instead we all have to settle for the Cleveland Cavaliers pissing, shitting, and vomiting away a 22-point lead over Ryan Eric King's New York Knicks.
Who do they think they are? The Atlanta Falcons?
Or the Minnesota... that game on a 44-11 run. Hey, Long gone Tigers.
Wild.
Hey. Would you have rather lost the game that way, or would you have rather lost the game in part because a guy that's like 8 feet tall hit a three-pointer from the logo right in your face?
Yeah, right at the end of that game in the Spurs OKC series, the Spurs realized, wait, Wemby's like really tall. What if we just kept throwing him the ball up top?
And this is working. This is the only time that this server is going to actually root for a team named the Spurs.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Probably. Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt. Go Wemby. That man is him. Only he could have his first Western Conference game and go 41-24 off it, as you do.
Sooner than Embiid.
And it wasn't no assists.
No need, quite frankly. So, as you probably already get out, RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley are here as well. And for those who are unfortunate not to be able to back us on Patreon and are not watching the video version we record on the other side, yes, Cam specifically got changed after the MotoGP upset to put on his Alex Palou jersey.
No, you Dre, you're
incidentally,
missing.
Incidentally, this is over my Alex Palou Indy 500 winner shirt.
Yeah, this is the thing. He switched from one Alex Palou shirt to another Alex Palou shirt.
Yes, I have both on right now.
Can't tell with the small can of WD-40 to do the thing to make the big can of WD-40 work.
I feel real good about this month so far. That's all I'm saying.
I can't, for the life of me, possibly imagine why that's a thing. We'll break down all the runners and riders. We'll talk about qualifying and the very adaptive format we had to go through because the rain came down on Saturday and pushed it all back to Sunday. We had to come up with a unique and brand new qualifying format on the fly to replace the previous brand new qualifying format we came up with on the fly. Yeah, it makes sense somewhere. You're just going to have to
trust me on this one. One more lane will fix it.
Exactly. A third queue has entered Indianapolis. We'll talk about that, the grid itself, and of course, we'll make our picks for the biggest race of them all. Places you can find us real quick in the meantime are on youtube.com/motorsport101 or on facebook.com/motorsport101 or on Twitter at motorsport_101. Not to follow us personally, you can do so. I'm at Dre Harrison 101 on Twitter. RJ is on Blue Sky, RJ CrumbleUpBeastGuy.social. Cam is on CBuckley917 on Twitter, and Christopher is at CDeHardy on Twitter. Follow at your peril. If you want highlights of the show, you can do so on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod, then on TikTok, M101_podcast. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Put your glasses back on, DeHardy, for fuck's sake.
Patreon.com. He probably has the most professional Twitter account out of all of us at this stage.
He absolutely does.
He's forced to do so.
Yeah, like
even when Twitter actually has downvoted or minimized the exposure of polls. And I found this out the hard way because a couple of weeks ago on a Monday, I said, I actually put a poll out. Which fantasy car dealership would you want to buy a car from? Kunkelman Chevrolet or Big Bill Hell's Cars? No votes.
Telling you, if I see free Hydrox cookies, I'm walking the other way.
Yeah, it's fine.
Isn't X's user experience just wonderful, folks? Anyway,
I know it's a great place. It's a great site. Patreon.com/motorsport101. And you can find us all on there, etc., etc. Cool. Right. Without further ado, let's break into the Indy 500 and the story so far.
Before we get into it, of course, it's the Indy 500. It's a race of 33 cars. Here are the extra runners and riders now that we know who all of them are and knew who all of them were going to be before we even turned the wheel in practice. So Jacob Abel is back at the Speedway. He did not get a chance to run his first Indy 500 last year. He was low man bumped, but he's back this year with his family's team, Abel Motorsports. That's the first big cameo entrant. The second one, Ed Carpenter, the modern Gary Bettenhausen. He is the owner and driver of Ed Carpenter Racing, ECR as it's now, back for his 23rd straight Indy 500, I want to say
23.
I think 23, yeah.
Yeah, that's good longevity for the former runner-up of the race, two-time previous pole sitter, but that's nothing on the 26 consecutive starts that Helio Castroneves has made, one of only four drivers to win the race four times. Helio Castroneves is back for Meyer Shank Racing. He's 50 years old. You really couldn't tell besides the gray hair with the energy that he has.
51. 51. It was his birthday last week.
Happy birthday, Helio. Congratulations. Yeah, 51 years old, and he still has all the energy and vibrance of a man that's like, I don't know, just breaking into the business. Dry rhyme, but
racing. This is when you would put that Unk Still Got It gif with the guy with the jump rope.
But we'll get to that in a second. Dreyer and Reinbold Racing, a mainstay from the olden days of the Indy Racing League, is back for its obligatory 500 appearance. They have Connor Daly in car number 23 and Jack Harvey in car number 24. Arrow McLaren does not have the Kyle Larson double attempt. Instead, it has Ryan Hutter-Reay, the 2014 race winner, appearing in the fourth car for Arrow McLaren. Takuma Sato, two-time Indy 500 champion, is back for Ray Hall Letterman Atlantic of Racing. We talked about Unks That Still Got It. Takuma Sato is 49 years old and still drives like he would have 10, 15, 20 years ago. I'd probably even say better than that. He was so good last year. And the last-minute entry, the 59th second of the 59th minute of the 11th hour entry from HMD Motorsport with some help from AJ Foyt Racing, Catherine Legg is back. And not only is she back at the Indianapolis 500, she's going to be the first woman to attempt the double, to go run the Indianapolis 500 and fly to Charlotte to do the Coca-Cola World 600 in NASCAR.
Only the seventh person ever to attempt the Memorial Day double. Only one person has ever actually completed all 1,100 miles, and that was Tony Stewart in 2001. Happy birthday, Smoke, for yesterday as well. A very last-minute entry for Catherine Legg to make. A lot of people will talk about that when we go through the grid rundown later, but those are the extra eight on the grid to get us to our full grid of 33. Oh, wait, that means no bump day. Damn it. Yes.
No bump day.
That's right. Colton Herta was going to do this, and then events outside of his or any of our control forced Formula 2 to add some races, including around Montreal supporting the Canadian Grand Prix, which is on this weekend. So a planned fourth car for Andretti Global did not materialize because they decided if it can't be Colton Herta, it's going to be nobody. And Honda said if it can't be an extra engine for Andretti Global, it's going to be nobody. Also, Callum Ilott and Pramer Racing USA are on the sideline still. We didn't have any extra entries on top of that. I got thoughts. I know that traditions at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway change over time. I know that this is not the qualifying format that we've had going back to the days of 1910s and the 20s and 30s, when drinking a bottle of buttermilk at Victory Lane was deemed socially acceptable and not weird. I understand that. However, however,
brother,
I will say, it is a lot more fun to do time trials. The Indy 500 time trials, by the way, might be the most compelling qualifying format in all of racing, and I don't think it's a might. It's so much better when there is a risk that somebody noteworthy could miss the show, or multiple somebodies could miss the show, because the Indianapolis 500 is still the one big race where you usually, if you're oversubscribed, there are no guarantees. There's no 25-8 rule nowadays. That lasted for 2 years, and thank goodness it died quickly.
Yeah.
Pack watch on that rule.
Pack watch indeed. As a result of the fact we didn't get a Monday, which sucked, because the added jeopardy is what makes the Indy 500 what it is for me. But to compromise for that, instead, IndyCar announced going into the race weekend that they were going to basically change the format again. So what the original plan was, and I say original here loosely because we all know what's about to happen here, the original Saturday qualifying, the usual fare, 7-hour session, everybody gets their one guaranteed run, then we open up the queues, was going to set the grid for position 16 to 33. Because as you know, as long as you qualify, you're in. So no need for a last chance qualifier. So 16 to 33 would be set on Saturday. The top 15 would go on towards Sunday, where there'd now be an extra Jeopardy round of a shootout where positions 10 through 15 would go again, and 10, 11, 12 from that session would join the other 9 guaranteed entrants in the Fast 12 round. Fast 12, Fast 6, like usual, and other IndyCar rounds, and that sets the final grid.
Yeah, we made an NBA play-in round, basically. Yes,
basically. We're only, yes, okay, 15 if you go through the Namora, but only 9 of you are actually guaranteed in the Fast 12, as you do. But there was a problem. Saturday was a washout. We had rain, and it did not go away, basically. Even lightning later on in the afternoon, so people had to leave the media center and the track entirely and find shelter. Saturday was declared a washout eventually, and basically we now have to figure out another new format, because in an ideal world you don't really want to qualify on a Monday, because no one's going to be there and no one's going to watch on TV because we're all back at work. So they had to come up with a compromise, and the compromise was, okay, we're going to do the whole thing on Sunday instead. Stuff the play-in round that RJ just alluded to. We're now going to set the grid off of one guaranteed run only. Positions 13 to 33 would be locked in after that first guaranteed run, and then we'd go straight into a Fast 12 and a Fast 6 to determine the final running order. The top 12 in the end: Felix Rosenquist, David Malukas, Connor Daly, Scott McLaughlin, Rinus VK, Alexander Rossi, Kyle Collette, a surprise for AJ Foyt racing there as a rookie. More on him later. Scott Dixon, Pato Award, Santino Ferrucci, Alex Palou just sneaking in, given he took the 31st entry due to his wife picking the qualifying draw number. Bad luck, honey. And Kiffin Simpson, the 12th and final man to make it into the late afternoon's Fast 12. More drama in that Fast 12 round. We had a couple of dudes take some real trim-related gambles. I don't know if you remember this. Scott McLaughlin hitting 242 miles an hour during his Fast 12. Multiple times during his Fast 12, he trimmed the ever-loving shit out of that car, and there was actually, I think, 16, 17 mile-an-hour gusts in that bottom corner.
Honka steer.
just tried to smooth it out, but he didn't make it in the end, lost all his speed in that Fast 12 round. A couple of guys really did try to gamble on very high-risk setups. Rinus VK was one of them. He was one of the guys who lost out. Kyle Collette nearly put it in the wall as well during that Fast 12 round. He just about got away with it.
Connor Dalia was too loose on his run. I was listening to his scanner, actually, you know, the crew saying weight jacker. And then he actually talked about it on his podcast, Speed Street, earlier today. After several months of being behind on the show, over the course of this week, I finally got caught up with it. And yeah, he just said they tried a different trim level, it just didn't work. And so that's why he will start eighth for next Sunday's race.
So in other words, Connor Daly should have indeed kept it sealed. That's one for you deep pocket monster fans out there. Anyway, the final six, as it was, Felix Rosenquist, Alex Palou, David Malukas, Pato Award, Santino Ferrucci, and Alex Rossi. And we're burying the lead here. Like, in that round of 12, Felix Rosenquist put down the fastest overall run of anybody across the rounds, a 2:32.5. Wow. And it was 0.7 on the field.
Throughout Sunday, that was one car that just seemed nigh on invulnerable. Go out there, crush a mid-232 average, walk away.
Yeah. You did it twice. I said going into the fast six that as long as nothing happens to Felix, you might as well give him pole position and give him the sticker right now. We're wasting everybody's time here because he was... Fun fact, his qualifying run to get into the fast 12 was so fast. He had 0.7 of a mile an hour on second place qualifier David Malukas. The gap between first and second was the same as second down to 12th. Yeah. That's how dominant Rosenquist was in the early qualifying rounds until the fast six happened. This is the second time it's happened with Felix where it just doesn't come together in the final round, the fast six round. In fact, the early benchmark came from Alex Rossi, who had to go first in that final, which is typically a disadvantage. 2:31.9, his best run of the weekend.
Terrific.
Where did he pull that out of?
until later events that we will expand on soon. Alex Rossi just went out and hung his ass over the ragged edge. He was working in that car. We could see him working in that car, but the speed came.
Yeah. Rossi said on the off track, which he recorded after other events that we'll talk about in a little bit. Mm-hmm. During practice, they were working on different strategies with regenning and deploying the hybrid. And they tried a thing that they had stumbled upon during practice, and it worked. It worked really well.
That's something that actually I think we can expand on a little bit here, that second year of the hybrids, and last year really the only dissenter on hybrid strategy was one Takuma Sato, who tried a little bit of regen and deploy every lap and stuck that thing second last year. That said, RLL were so trash this year that even he could not save them from the doldrums. The RLL decade of malaise at the speedway continues, unless they have to turn right as well.
The fun part of it is that we're seeing a lot more creativity on hybrid deployment this year compared to last year. People are just learning how these things work now and become more efficient with it.
Yeah, I think our whole front row, all three of them had significantly different deploy strategies.
Mm-hmm. And that's an
element of jeopardy for with the hybrid rather than it just making the support objectively worse.
It's kind of the one thing that it kind of adds to Indy 500 tiles. We know that it's heavy. We know that the car is kind of a patch job at this point. We know. But
insert Jeff Gordon from Gran Turismo 5.
But I will say it is nice that a qualifying run can just be dictated by because back in the day it was just like, okay, how gradually do you fall off from your first lap speed? Now it's possible to actually gain pace over the course of a qualifying run, which I think is more of a throwback to the days when the cars weren't quite as dialed in, where you had a lot more power mechanical grip at your disposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just do you think we're lacking really just more just outright speed over an entire run? We're still 2 miles an hour or so off the fastest of what we were doing pre-hybrid, and the legendary set of 234 mile an hour runs we had from McLaughlin and Pillow and VK and Rosenquist from a couple of years prior. The row where Rosenquist had a 233.1 mile an hour run and qualified third in his own 500. Yeah, that happened. But yes, it was Alex Rossi that set the early benchmark. Ferrucci admitted post run they hadn't actually touched a trim all day, but just didn't quite have the ultimate pace to match his previous runs. He would line up fifth. Kind of Award went out, actually lost speed in his final run. Again, maybe they tried something on the trim that we don't know about, but he would end up in sixth. David Malukas, now
attaboy.
I will say this wholeheartedly. What you witnessed was exactly why Roger Penske decided to invest in this young man 18 months ago. Monster run, 231.8, including a 232 mile an hour lap four. Which
only one of the day.
The only person in the whole field to pull that off. He got faster and faster as the run went on, but the start was just a little low by comparison, and that's probably what ultimately resigned him to his place on the which will not spoil just yet. But Malukas, monster run. Everything everybody said about him in a Penske is turning out to be true. Scary talent coming out of Little Dave. Well, doesn't want to be called Little Dave anymore. He's Big Dave now. Big Dave with the little bastard troublemaker kit.
He's doing all this during Bicycle Safety Month, National Bicycle Safety Month.
Them stem cells are doing the hard graft, my friend. Two runs left. Cam's beloved, Mr. Alex Pillow. And this is where I was sat down, and this is the part with the meme where you lean forward on the chair. And I'm like, okay, what's Alex Pillow got? I was astonished. 232.248 out of nowhere, and we didn't find out for a good few hours later. Chip gambled. They had the lowest trim level and downforce level of anyone in the field on that final run. They told Pillow, give it as low a trim as you got and see if you can handle it. He did.
it's just what he does. I mean, He's always been decent at qualifying here when Ganassi's got the parts.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were the only team that really were able to effectively chase the track through the day and gain time each run out. The fast 12 run was in the peak of the heat of the day. He barely scraped through. But in their own words, that gave them the tools to go work on the car to go figure out a setup that would be able to chase the track. He took a big jump in the fast 12, and then that fast 6 run. I mean, it's a work of art. It's just what he does. There's one man who can go trim the car to the point where it's like visibly more trimmed out than every other car on the rear wing. And you never would have guessed it looking at it because it was just blah.
Only 241 miles an hour down the back straight. Only man to touch that in the final six. And yeah, 232.248, his best run of the entire week. What a time to pull that one. As Camden said, the only person in the entire field that found time over the course of the day constantly. He puts it on provisional pole. One man to go. It's Felix Rosenquist. And oh no, it's happened again. Felix, who looked like all he had to do was breathe in the right direction that he would have taken pole position, lost 1.3 miles an hour on his final run, 231.375. Unfortunately, this speedway forgets what you've done last time around, given the way that rounds reset. He will line up fourth.
Speedway didn't forget that Morgan Wallen livery.
We will not still have a beige racist on the front row. I refuse. I may or may not have mildly celebrated that occasion. Felix, it's not you, it's your team, I promise. I like you. You're not the issue here. It's them fuckers. Anyway, Felix Rosenquist would line up fourth on the grid in the end. 231, 375. Alex Polo is a two-time Indy 500 pole sitter, and he collects a big old check for $100,000 and, importantly, 12 extra championship points for qualifying on pole from the Fast 12. Big for the champion, given that a certain Kyle Kirkwood was nowhere near that Fast 12. Worth pointing out. Could
transplant that statement to pretty much all of Andretti. They were just poor in qualifying.
Again. I mean, we'll get into it as we run down the field. Chris, you've been there for like the whole week of it. You saw the qualifying day. You saw all the days leading up to practice. And I just want to point this out. We joked about Alex Palou, like stacking the adversity early to make the 500 success, if it comes, look even more impressive. But he had an engine issue on the first day, basically didn't do a whole lot of practice. Barely squeaks into the Fast 12 round to begin with and ends up with pole position.
Worth noting, RJ,
with the Infinity gels.
Yeah, it's worth noting, RJ, he had that reduced running on day one, wheeled it out of the garage, and then immediately punched that shit into first.
I know what it's called, but...
The word of the week for Alex Palou is confidence, because he had the confidence once the crew went over the car on the first day to go out on track. First flying lap, he sets the fastest time of the day.
I remember that.
And, Hinch and Will Buxton in the commentary box was laugh at it.
And then you look at what happened on Saturday. They squeaked their way into the top 12. They don't care where they're placed in the seating. They just need to get there in the first place. And then doing the Fast 12 run to get into the Fast 6, then that gave Julian and, you know, his race engineer, Julian Robertson, race strategist, Barry Wanzer, the three of them, you know, must have had a couple of conversations, and they said, hey, if you want to go for this and go for pole, let's make it happen. And if Alex had the confidence, they would do it. And, well, guess what? They had the confidence, and they did the damn thing. You don't trim the car that much in Indianapolis if you don't have confidence in your team, and you don't have confidence in your driver to actually make it happen. And both of them knew that if they trimmed it well enough, and the correct way, that it was going to pay dividends big time. What they were not expecting was Felix Rosenquist to lose that much speed in his run. I spoke to him on pit road after the race. I was in a bit of a mini bullpen session there, and they were just mystified. They did not know where the speed went. I don't think they trimmed properly for that final run of the day, but that is probably the biggest mystery of qualifying to me. Just where did all that speed go for Rosenquist?
Yeah, they talked about it a little bit to the Motorsport Network, and like they trimmed Rosenquist's car a little bit. They thought it was in a pretty good place, so they more or less left it alone. And for whatever reason, the pace just evaporated from that car. And in the meantime, Palou's car took a substantial jump in that final run. To paraphrase something that's been referenced before in regards to the Marquez brothers and Ken Griffey Jr., they trimmed that car all the way out because to beat Felix Rosenquist needed something special. Mm-hmm. Alex Palou can only be that special. He's goddamn good, man. This kid's from Super Formula, man.
I watched, again, one of the busiest Discord streams you've had all year. About 20 of us were in there watching that, and I could only laugh when that run was over. I'm like, he's just done it again, hasn't he? He finds a way. He just does.
It was going on to the third lap when we see, oh, the second lap is a 232. Oh, shit.
I was
on the call with him, and supporter of the show, Sasha, and I were just watching the speed counter just in a mix of shock and awe, because not so much the top speed. We saw more top speed out of McLaughlin. It's the fact that he could clip 241 going down the backstretch off into three. Was using the regen kind of in little chunks to actually rotate the car, but not enough to then overload that right rear tire because it is so critical. You need it on that third and fourth lap. And it was just what you expect out of this guy after watching him his whole career in IndyCar. He just goes out there and is dead clinical about it.
I love that my man basically invented Indy 500 qualifying run power oversteer on the fly, and it's what got him his second 500 pole position.
If there's any time to do so, you might as well do it in the clutch.
He's a fucking genius. Honestly,
so
the same day we had Dario Franchitti in the commentary box alongside the usual protagonists, and honestly, if Dario Franchitti calls you a maestro behind the wheel, you'd have to unpeel me off the ceiling with a 6-foot spatula.
He knew a little bit about how to get around this place.
That's not a cringe touch.
Yeah,
that's maestro is a great moniker. It doesn't feel cringe and it doesn't feel forced.
Because Dario could be in that commentary box tomorrow, but he doesn't want to breach his conflict of interest with Chip Ganassi Racing because he's just that good at his job, and it's a nice easy check. He gets to do a little bit of coaching, looks at a little bit of data, and then he gets to drive a Gordon Murray T50 back home. Lucky bastard. quite frankly. So before we run down the grid, there's a couple of things we need to point out here. First of all, bad news we found out on Monday morning for the last race practice session, well, besides the weather again. Kyle Collette and Jack Harvey were demoted to the back of the grid. They effectively had their times removed due to a technical regulation breach, and it was modified engine covers. And if that sounds familiar to you...
It was not
energy management system. So what happened, first of all, Dallara's like terminology for this is kind of confusing. It has nothing to do with the hybrid. I went over and looked over a couple of things from last year. What it actually was referring to are the covers that go over the front suspension A-arms that conceal the wheel tether system inside, which I'm assuming the tethers are managing the energy of the front wheels in the crash. Anyway, it's a weird, convoluted way of naming it. Anyway, basically, the way that, from what I've understood it is, if you can modify how those covers for the front suspension like move through the air, you can actually like affect the way the drag is on the car.
It's a thing about actually the bolts and covers that you use. And previously you could use more or less additional material to then fill in the gap there. And as we are a year on from the famous Blend Ghazi incident, anything that you can do to smooth airflow anywhere will be scrutinized and will be exploited when possible. Racer actually put out a video about this. This looks more like this was a change for the rules this year of what you could and could not do with those. Mm-hmm. Because, again, suspension in IndyCar is spec only really in the parts that you can buy outside the dampers, but not necessarily how you use them.
And who knows how long that'll last.
Yeah, we'll see. And this was appears to be just a genuine operational fuck up on the parts that you're allowed to use were not the parts that were fitted.
And as a result, that is a instant disqualification. It's a technical regulation breach, as it was in most motorsport series. To the back of the grid you go. Darn shame for Kyle Collette in particular, who acquitted
himself so well. And
fantastic effort to make the Fast 12 on debut by a country mile, the fastest rookie out of the four that we had taking part this year. And such a shame he's going to be starting from the back of the grid. That was a monster effort from the young Brazilian. Damn shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, correct me if I'm wrong. He does not get to keep his bonus check for being the fastest rookie now that this has happened, correct?
I'm going to assume that he doesn't, but if he doesn't, you know who that bonus check goes to for the fastest rookie.
Would that be the son of a 5-time winner at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? That would be Mick Schumacher, who is a big fan of cows, as it turns out.
He enjoyed milking that motherfucker. Unfortunately, Monday would take the headlines in a very different way. A massive, major three-car wreck that took place in the middle of the two-hour-long race practice session. It's encouraged people to go out in packs and, again, figure out car setup for the big race itself. Simply put, Alex Rossi dipped a wheel below the paint on turn two, lost control of the car, spun up into the outside wall. Pato O'Ward then effectively does the same, trying to avoid, and obviously the puff of smoke that he sees when Rossi loses control of his car, They hit each other on the out on the exit of turn two as they head down the back straight sideways. And sadly, Romain Grosjean effectively does this the exact same thing himself, trying to take avoided action. That was pretty much the last act of practice as a result, because the rain shortly came down afterwards. Thankfully, relatively speaking, everybody okay. Pato and Grosjean quickly cleared from the medical center. We didn't find out until the following morning with Alex Rossi that he actually had to have a couple of medical procedures done overnight in the local hospital to repair a hand injury and have his foot in a cast briefly to help repair with that busted joint that he had down there. Don't worry. He's still expected to race on Sunday as it stands. Which, but having writing off your main race car is just a horrible shame.
Especially putting 1P2. That car, I mean, we saw him working hard all week, and unfortunately, a little bit of turning too much left. And for Pato, I mean, I don't know what to expect for Pato at this point, because McLaren looked decent in race trim, but not great on their own. And then that's their, you know, tip of the spear gone, basically, and going to a backup car.
Yeah, they'll still hold their positions because you only go to the back after a driver change, not if you change chassis like you would in, say, NASCAR
or another
championship. Yeah, like in the USAC days, basically.
So one thing I will say, so Rossi actually mentioned this in the live show we did yesterday over at Cracker Barrel, which was
I appreciate that Alex Palou is like, hey, man, glad you're all right. Could I get one of those Cracker Barrel gold cards?
I should also say this Cracker Barrel show that they did was only like 10 or 15 minutes away from my house. I probably, if I had the world clock,
you didn't give me any raspberry sweet tea.
Did we go to that Cracker Barrel, Chris? Was that the one we went to?
We did. That is that the one where you found God in the parking lot?
No. That was that guy on Twitter. I'm still looking for him.
So
still one of the funniest fucking days on Twitter in years.
Oh my god!
Beautiful.
So Alex said the main cause of the accident was that he was actually going too slow. With these cars, they are designed to work within a peak operating window. If you go too slow, they are sketchy as all hell. If you go too fast, it's sketchy as all hell. There's a prime operating window that they work between. Exactly. It's like Goldilocks, right? Which also means that when you have... Hey, what am I going to say, right? So... rookie tests can be pretty sketchy because they're not designed to work at those lower speeds. But when you get faster, it sometimes it gets easier. So Rossi's previous lap was only 207 miles an hour. If Rossi had been going, 10 or 15 miles an hour, faster, because there's a bit of a checkup effect going on. If he had been going like normal speed, like 215, 220, 223 or 4, he would have been fine, no problem. But when you're going, that slow, going through turn number two, the laws of physics are undefeated. Now, the one saving grace that Rossi has, he mentioned it in the show, and I was trying to make sure I got the quotes right because I'm doing my upon further review column, trying to make the mechanics out to be heroes, which they truly are.
Absolutely.
The car that Rossi will be driving in the race coming up is, if my memory is correct, what Rossi said was that it was the same car that he drove at the October test last year when they were testing out shock components, brake components, and different Firestone compounds ahead of this year, and also testing out the bump at the exit of turn number two. The underfloor and, I want to say, front wings... front wing on the car were actually part of the open test that took place back in April. Those are going to be fine for the car as well. And they're going to get those on the car. Yeah, a car they know pretty much. So just to kind of reiterate, let's go back in time a little bit, because I want to kind of make sure that people that are listening to this and maybe don't know have the full picture here, the full broad scope of everything. So A lot of teams have a car that is dedicated exclusively to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indy 500. And if they don't, sometimes it might be used as a backup at a couple of other places in very rare cases. What will happen for those cars is after the Indy 500 is done, that car will be placed on the side in the race shop, out of the way, and they will take care of all their other cars for the rest of the racing season. When the season finale is over, that car gets brought out front and center. They take the whole thing apart, and they start meticulously building up the car bit by bit, piece by piece. Now, there's a few things that you can do to make these cars transformed into a super speedway missile that will go as fast as humanly possible at the speedway. There's three main areas to focus on. The first, the uprights of the suspension, trying to make sure that you got all the nuts and bolts the right way, the right bearings, things like that. Make sure that the left-hand ones weigh a little bit more than the right-hand ones, you know, things like that. Secondly, the gearbox. Gearbox bearings. Make sure you have as little rolling resistance inside the gearbox as humanly possible. I believe the difference between a gearbox that's prepped by X-Track, just a standard one, and the Super Speedway, ultimately great prepared ones, is like a couple miles an hour, actually.
And I remember this came up when Kyle Kaiser did his run to knock Fernando Alonso out of the field in 2019.
That was not an Indy 500 car.
Yes,
yeah, so, very much famously wasn't.
And then the last part of that is the body fit. So whenever you put together the body panels on an IndyCar to put them all together, you know, to cover up all the electrical and the plumbing and the exhaust and all that kind of stuff, the way they all fit together is that there's these little seams in between the engine cover, the side pods, and everything else like that. These teams will spend weeks and weeks trying to minimize the gaps between body panels to where they fit together so precisely that it's almost as if you don't even need helicopter tape to cover up the seams in the first place. When Catherine Legg had her collision with Stefan Wilson in the Monday after the qualifying practice, that was a lot of work that was gone thrown out the window. And I looked at her car on pit road the morning of the 500. And if there wasn't any helicopter tape on there, I probably could have fit two quarters in between the side pod and the radiator intake on the right-hand side of the car. I actually still have a picture of that on pit road. So there's a lot of like little minutiae that goes into working on these cars in the off season, and Pato Award's team, which they're going to use a low mileage tub to replace Pato's tub.
Yeah.
They had to do basically 6 months worth of work in just over 4 days.
Yep.
If it's going to be as good as what they had.
Yeah. We'll have to see. Cause like, yeah, these cars are spec. The chassis are spec, but how you prepare them is anything but. That means that every individual advantage that you can pull from preparation and build matters that much more. And at Indianapolis, look, drag is burnt horsepower. Horsepower is everything. You have nowhere to hide here.
To put this in a bit more perspective, a couple of years ago, Marcus Ericsson had a crash on the first day of 500 practice. I want to say it was 2024.
And the year Tom Brock was there. The rest of his weekend. It ruined it. He was down to the last row shootout because the backup car wasn't up to stuff, and he was mercifully put out of his misery, if there ever is such a thing you could do at the Indianapolis 500, because he was swept up in the first lap accident.
So the reason why they went to a backup tub for that car is when they actually did the body fit of the rest of the bodywork and the actual tub itself, the backup tub, it fit better with the primary bodywork that they had than the backup bodywork that they had. That's why they switched to a new tub, because the body fit was off. Even if it's a spec car, there's still like differences in like microns and how these panels fit together. If they're all worked to fit on one tub, it may not fit properly on another tub, and there's still small little gaps that will cost you speed.
It's the unfair advantage. Exactly. You have to go try and regain the unfair advantage in 4.5 days, and I'm going to be real with you, with McLaren this month, have been great.
I mean, I have faith in Ed Carpenter Racing's ability to do this, but it's still going to be a mountain to climb.
You know it as well as any of us, Chris. This is the track that prioritized. This is the one that they put the most effort and most care into. Is always their 500 program.
And Alexander Rossi,
like Ryan
And Alexander Rossi chose ECR as his landing spot after McLaren because he wanted Indy 500 win number two above all else.
Yeah. And then a race like Dreyer and Reinbold, like they did last year, where Ryan Hunter-Reay burns up his car on pit road on carb day. And then they take a backup car that was a pit stop car that they're at their race shop, build it together, and now come within one lap of fuel strategy of actually winning the whole race last year.
Well, remember, everyone, when Dale Earnhardt finally won that Daytona 500, the drag on that body wasn't that great. Larry Mack himself called that car mysterious. There's nothing mysterious about putting it on the track and winning.
Every man on every crew. Dre, should we run down this grid bottom to top or top to bottom? Because
bottom's more fun.
Right.
Actually, you know what? We haven't done it this way this year. Let's go bottom to top. We haven't done it this way before. So let's talk about
bottom to top. Row 11 is the aforementioned Kyle Collette and Jack Harvey, who had their speeds thrown out due to technical breaches. And Stingray Robb, whose one and only run really was a reminder of how it is more ideal to have a chance to do multiple runs over a full day than it is to have pressure doing one run, because Stingray Robb's run was putrid. Awful. Atrocious. He wasn't comfortable with the car. The car looked unhappy every time he made the corner. He makes the race with a speed that is much, much slower than everybody else.
It's 2 miles per hour slower than the next fastest car, and he did well to get it to that point because he was having to lift and just about crashed every time he turned the wheel.
That car looked like it was trying to kill him. And I don't exaggerate when I say that either. That was an awful looking. It was a nervous looking run to watch because you were watching in fear that the big one was about to happen. Stingray did well to get it back home in one piece. But yeah, he'll be starting in 31st place ahead of Collette and Harvey's. As mentioned, their times were thrown out. As mentioned, Stingray Robb, 226.5. Next nearest driver, 228.1. 1.6 mile an hour difference between Robb and anybody else. We go to row 10, and row 10, it's some familiar names. Graham Rahal will be starting.
Not again.
From 27, which is actually a good result for him in given recent years.
There was no... You know, even if there was a bump day, he wouldn't have been in danger because Stingray Robb's run was just that bad. I'm going to be real with you. They need to sink this chassis to the bottom of the sea where it can never see light again.
Do we know if this is his old car?
Because I don't know. I don't know. And
look like it.
I can try and find out, but it's just, I still think it's just a situation where I think it's a tub issue with his car, but when you've only got one more race after this, it's like, how much are you going to be willing to spend to actually see, you know, how much what a new car would do? Yeah. I'm wondering if they actually brought it to Aerodyne, because that's the, for those of you who don't know, Aerodyne is a composites company in Indianapolis that actually does a lot of repairs on Indy cars. I guess Indy cars like approve them to do work to help the cars.
They're the approved kind of repair solution outside of the
exactly,
law themselves.
Exactly. And it's just, I'm just wondering if they ever brought the car over there to have them like crack check it or just test it or whatever. Cause like, that's just, that's such a weird thing for them to have to deal with year after year after year. It can't be a coincidence, but I digress.
Yeah, I mentioned during the Discord stream was up when Rahal did his one and only run that he said, oh, car's really slow as he crossed the line to finish his run. And I saw a Blue Sky post that read something along the lines of, Graham Rahal sounds like a Pokemon saying his own name. And I was just like, no. I was just like, that's mead.
I was actually listening to his radio after that run. He was just like, yeah, it just did not accelerate off the corners. And he said, there must have been a lot more drag in that rear wing than what we had expected. So,
yeah, exactly. He will be starting from 28th place ahead of Dennis Hauger. His first attempt to qualify in 29th for their coin. And Jacob Abel, who will make his first 500 after qualifying in 30th place.
Respectable run for Jacob.
A respectable effort given the resources available on that team, which, let's be frank, isn't much. Safely
sponsored by the best rolls. in all the country, because they got Texas Roadhouse on the side of that thing.
Yeah, we got Texas Roadhouse,
indeed, baby.
But we can't get Miller High Life back. Row 9, very compelling row. Mick Schumacher, now officially the fastest rookie, making his first Indy 500 start at the place where his father Michael won 5 times in the U.S. Grand Prix. Catherine Legg, as mentioned, the first woman to attempt the double 20 years on from her Champ Car debut. God, time flies. And Kyle Kirkwood down here in 25th place, which is not an ideal place to start. I believe the only person to start this far back and win in the post-Wide World of Sports era is Johnny Rutherford in 1974. Nobody else has started further back since the days when this race was regularly on television. And Dre, a theme of the weekend, Andretti Global in qualifying looked shambolic for a Power 4 team.
This is an unmitigated disaster. Like, Andretti typically have had at least one big hitting car towards the front of the field. Colton Herta has had decent qualifying runs in years past. Will Power, part of the reason why Andretti pined for him was because he's an excellent 500 runner for the most part, and he's a fantastic qualifier. And we'll get to him shortly. And that's the problem. We'll get to him shortly because he didn't qualify that well.
Yeah.
And as mentioned, that's 12 more points Kirkwood has now conceded in the championship race to Alex Palou. Worst case scenario, you've done nothing and you've given your title rival a 12-point extra swing. Not ideal. Awful for Kirkwood, given that he's been excellent just about everywhere else so far this season.
For Catherine Legg, in a very last-minute program that was assembled only when HMD got assurance that there would be no bumping, to have it all put together that late and to out-qualify some drivers that team and driver, frankly, probably shouldn't have on paper, very commendable. And I'll say this as well. Mick Schumacher, not being the last-place Ray Hall car with all his oval inexperience, that's not bad at all.
To put Catherine Legg's situation into more perspective, she did not complete her veteran refresher on the first day of the April Open test.
That's right.
She could put it on the second day, and let's just call a spade, she had to rely on toes on the draft to get the car to be able to complete that.
Right.
During a Fast Friday session, she was the slowest car. I think she was the only car, or one of only two cars, that didn't actually top 230 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And she, like, I saw her in the garage area afterward, and she did not look happy at all. She was on her phone, like, just, like, you know, talking to somebody. I don't know who it was, but it was just, you could tell just by looking at her, she was not talking to anybody about anything. And that was a situation where, like, you know, this car is being crewed by HMD's Indy Next program. It's got some technical assistance from AJ Foyt Racing, but
it's not
more HMD than it is AJ Foyt.
Yes, 110%. And this is a situation where, you know, everything came together so late. You know, I don't even know when they got that car. Or if it was just an AJ Foyt car that they're leasing, or what the situation is, but for her to pull that out of the hat was very impressive for her to do. Very, very impressive. So good job, Catherine.
Her highest ever start at the Indy 500 in the five attempts that she's had across her career. This was the best.
It wasn't
going to
be in the Lotus
efforts.
Now, was it?
She did not qualify the Lotus. She did not qualify the Lotus.
Oh, yeah. She was one of the drivers that had the engine pulled.
Yep.
Yeah. Simona that got stuck with the Lotus.
Simona in the other car, and Jeanne Alesi.
I feel bad for Jeanne Alesi that his only time at the Indy 500 was with Lotus.
Yeah,
I really do.
There was, like, more horsepower in that watch on the side of the car than there was in the engine.
Yeah, he had no shot of doing anything, like, with that boat anchor behind
him. It's fine. He got to make up for it. He got to fit Jeremy Clarkson in one of their replica F1 cars instead. Who wouldn't want that? That's row 9. Great job from Mick Schumacher. You can't complain about outqualifying a 20-year veteran of the series on your first attempt. There's a bit of oval speed in this kid. I like it. Row 8. And this is another big name, high-powered row. Two former winners, on row 8. Ryan Hunter-Reay on the outside there with a 230.2 run. Joseph Dugard. Shut up, Chris. Close enough. Joseph Ugarden in the middle. Joseph in P24. Just not like, well, 23 now post deductions, but still. Yeah. Very interesting interview where they had Georgia talk to Joseph immediately after his run was over. And almost with a hint of sarcasm in his voice, Joseph turned around and said, quote, "Well, that's all she's got." And I don't believe him, not for a second. I think it was a very safe looking run. There's got to be more speed in that car. This is Joseph Newgarden we're talking about here.
It's a weird one with Joseph. What I would say is, like, his car looks like grease lightning in traffic. Like, it looks like a fantastic race trim car in the pack.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not that fast on its own.
Yeah, that could be a problem. I saw the discourse is just like, oh, qualifying now is going to be less spectacular because everybody's going to play it safe knowing that they're in the race and like they're going to focus all the way on race ups. And like, fair enough, you got a fast enough car in the race, but like even in a year where everybody's guaranteed to qualify for the race, if you just show up, you ideally don't want to be starting on row 8 if you have any chance to win this race. Yeah, Joseph Newgarden clawed his way from the very back of the grid to almost win the thing last year before his car broke down due to mechanical failures and, of course, the cartoon anvil of karma crashing down upon him. But that took him a while to get there.
It just, indeed. It looks terrific in traffic. But it looks draggy. It looks like it's not a car I would want to go onto the last lap leading with. That's what I would say about it. And like, to that effect, like, even with the lack of drama with bump day, we saw some cars with rear wings that were generating lift, like trimmed the hell out because, well, if you crash, you're still in the show. I feel like that cuts both ways.
Maybe a safe run just to make sure Newgarden had a car to get into the show. Maybe faith that they'll make up the difference when it actually comes to race day. We'll see. Look, I would never rule out Newgarden out of winning this race, regardless of where he sits on the grid, especially if you watched him last year. Good Lord. Joining him as well on the outside of row 8 will be Romain Grosjean, who I would talk about in more detail, but unfortunately he's on my shit list now because we found out that the man has picked skimmed milk.
He was the only man to pick skim on the
we can't. Just bring orange juice. It'll be better for you.
Our tent is in the stands. Oh my goodness. For those of you who don't know, they had the milk poll. Most of the people picked whole milk because you can't pick any plant-based substitutes and all that. It's gotta be dairy milk. Most of the people pick whole. Few people pick 2%. Romain Grosjean went with skim. Nobody went with buttermilk. Apparently Ed Carpenter actually tried it recently after years of just like, well, I want to do buttermilk because Louis Meyer did in 1936 and I'm such a big mark for tradition. And he tried the buttermilk. It's just like, I think I'll just take whole.
Yeah, because buttermilk, much like other things that are sold as incomplete ingredients, it's an incomplete ingredient. It's a byproduct. Do not drink buttermilk. It's fucking gross.
Thankfully, nobody requested raw.
No, thank God.
You gotta wait for
you gotta wait a couple years in a relationship for that.
Episode and the whole Freedom 250 thing, I'm surprised that asking for raw is not an option. But we'll just leave it at that.
Now, it's gonna be interesting.
Dishonor on you.
I'm not even trying to be horny. Y'all chill out before I move over to row 7 where my
It's going to be interesting to see whether that makes the final edit or not.
I'm simply talking about raw milk and its status as a political apparatus in today's environment. Row 7 is where my pick
I've always
to win
wondered
presides.
If you put chocolate syrup inside of it, would they still give you the $10,000? Right.
Will Powers on the inside of Row 7 alongside two young drivers who could really, really use a good result at the Indy 500 to lift their spirits, that being Nolan Siegel and Louis Foster, the second the fastest of the full-time RLL drivers by a mile and a stretch. Once again, continuing the theme for willpower, Andretti Global, not really good in qualifying. And it's a good thing we have a potential amnesty in our Indy 500 predictions, because I feel a little less confident in willpower getting a second Indy 500 win that I did before the start of the week.
So once again, I ask, when does the revenge tour start? I'm asking for a friend. I feel like I missed the memo at Arlington. That's not good.
Yeah, like Andretti just looked mediocre all the way through time trials. McLaren, outside of Pato and even with Pato,
mid,
just very mid. It's the permanent bug watching them feels like they get to the apex of the turn and then it's like the front of the car isn't in the track and they just can't carry speed out of turns.
Yeah, just looks mid and looks like they've got no top end in those cars either. Also, interesting observation, McLaren had a visitor during the week of practice, and that was F2 champion of last year, Leonardo Fornaroli. Murmurs are abound that he may be in an IndyCar next year. One to keep an eye on, because we all know if it's a McLaren seat, the one the most likely to be replaced is him. We'll have to see on Christian Lingard.
I wonder who that could be.
I wonder if Christian Lingard will get any decent free agent offers. We'll have to see. We'll talk about him very briefly. Also, say his name and he appears. I told you to believe in the Foster. Good running. Good running, young man. Row 6, we have Marcus Armstrong ahead of... Actually, it's a Marcus Squared affair, because Marcus Ericsson is in the middle and Christian Lundgaard on the inside of that row. Yeah. Just row of mid, really more than anything else. So it's the most their row of all time. It's three dudes that were there.
Yeah. Another thing about, like, Shank had that one insane car with Felix, and the other two were just right in them. The rest of their group was just not that fast.
Yeah, I mean, they're fine, but they're not like Rosenquist fast. Not like he was
not even close.
Preliminary rounds and time trials. This is not where you expect a recent Indy 500 winner to be, that being Marcus Ericsson. That was his best race last year, and he got nothing to show for it. And Christian Lundgaard, the supposed new ace of Aero McLaren, only out qualifying the weakest link of the team by two spots.
Not great. Free my brother, etc. As you do. Yeah, but not much to really add on top of that one, really. Marcus Ericsson, best of the Andretti's, but that's a bit like winning the sack race at a school sports day with no sack. It feels like it's a little bit unfair. Not like that. Row 5.
You were on my case when I was not even talking about anything else just a few minutes ago. Calm
the
down.
Let's talk about
the fifth row, because it's no longer the unk roll because of penalties.
Yeah, we would have had a very unique situation where I believe if it was before penalties, we would have had the second oldest row in 500 history alongside them. Instead, unfortunately, due to penalties, we ruined it because Christian Rasmussen is down here instead. We still have Ed Carpenter, Helio Castroneves, and Christian Rasmussen in what I like to now call Grand Unc Division. A combined age of 96 between Ed Carpenter and Helio Castroneves.
Yeah, because previously it was 145.
As you do. And I'm not going to lie to you. Christian Rasmussen, is this your king? All the people that talk about he's the new IndyCar oval ace. I'm disappointed with Rasmussen being that far down the order. Especially given his teammate put it on the front row. I need to see more, Christian. So it's mid. It's mid and nothing more. Helio, like anything. To crack the top 15 at 51 is nuts.
He's just here to have fun. He's just here to have fun and maybe back into number 5 if things are just crazy. next Sunday.
Need I remind you that AJ Foyt qualified in the middle of the front row for the 1991 Indy 500, and at that time he was 56 years old.
And that was going to be a retirement race.
Because that was him alongside Mario Andretti and Rick Mears.
Yep. Into row four, and again, some big hitters here. Scott Dixon, who is still trying to weigh up how many Astor Cups he's prepared to sacrifice to win another one of these. Reedus VK in the middle, who, again, trimmed the ever-loving shit out of his car in that fast 12 run and nearly crashed.
Horrifying from lap two to four.
I was like, yeah, it's lap one, 232. Yay, laps two to four. Oh, God, it's trying to kill him. And Takuma Sato, who is still Takuma Sato.
Crazy Japanese executive. I love this guy.
Yeah, we were talking about how he couldn't save RLL for itself, and I know it's not a front row start, but I'll tell you, I'd rather be starting row four than rows 7, 9, 10, and I'll say this about Takuma Sato. I don't know if this is going to be his last Indianapolis 500, right? He's 49 years old. He's got a son that's in racing, and Honda has Kakuno Shinoda waiting in the rings to be potentially his successor. He'll be racing this weekend at Super Formula. I digress. Takuma Sato, I think, has earned, a big send-off in this race. It could have been last year. It could have been 2020 when he won it the second time. It could have even been 2017 when he won it the first time. His career is complete. I don't surprise that Takuma Sato could leave us with at least one more moment of Indy 500 magic. And for that matter, I think the same of Elio as well. Reedus VK, fast Reedus VK, is back in the menu with the Indy 500 now that he's with Juncos and DRR. Make a note of that connection. I know it didn't show through in the last 12 round because it was wrecking loose the whole time. Scott Dixon, man.
Yeah, Dixon. His best run was actually, his best runs were earlier. His final run was just okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His son picked the number one spot in the qualifying order.
And then dabbed to celebrate. As you know,
I think now we're dabbing on the show.
Yeah, I think it would have been good if that number one pick went through a 2-day format. I don't know about the press 1-day format. It's funny how these things turn out. Row three is interesting, Dre.
Very much so. A very interesting row. I think low key one of the performances of the weekend that no one has talked about. Kiffin Simpson in seventh place. That's a excellent, really job. Impressive job from Kiffin there. He's best at the speedway by a country mile. Really, really impressive performance from him. Connor Daly in the middle of row three there. I do genuinely think he's got a car that's good enough to win it this year. Like, Daly's been fast all week. Indiana will not hear the end of it if Daly pulls off a miracle. There'll be boxes of Evolving Skies ETBs lined up with his winnings if he's able to pull that one off.
Fried treasure map for everybody.
Yep, and Scott McLaughlin as well on that row, who again touched 242 miles an hour on that final run. Sheesh. He did in the fast 12, which
that thing was making lift.
During his run, I could actually hear the crowd at the main straightaway because they actually had the tracker of his mile per hour on there, and you could actually hear the crowd pop when it hit 242 or I think almost 243. It had on there.
Almost,
you could hear that.
Almost got to 243. The problem is that there was no speed in the turns because there was no downforce on it.
No.
As I've joked many a time on Discord watch-alongs with him, I will always say this. Scott McLaughlin will run less wing than you.
Unless your name's Alex Pillow.
Apparently.
As it turns out. Dre, didn't we see a situation like this in 2022 where we're not talking about the pay driver in the number 8 Ganassi car? And look, I know Kiffin Simpson is not as pedigreed as Marcus Ericsson at this stage in his career. But we've seen Chip Ganassi drivers brought in more for their money actually put together some strong performances at the Indianapolis 500. It worked for Charlie Kimball in 2015. It worked for Matt Chilton in 2017. And most famously, it worked for Marcus Ericsson in 2022. We all know what happened there.
Look, this is house money. if Kiffin's paying so much for his seat and he's a good 500 performer, that's house bread, quite frankly. Look, I've not been the most impressed with Kiffin in his time in IndyCar. I thought he really did start to come on a little bit towards the end of last season, the podium finish in Toronto, the running side by side of Scott McLaughlin for a podium to close out last season in Nashville. There's something here with Kiffin. I just wish he would show it a little bit more frequently. Like, I'm not calling him a write-off by any stretch. There's clearly some talent here. And just Chip's just got a good base.
Ganassi has been, like, this all reliable all month.
Yep, indeed. That's an outstanding performance from Kiffin. I think he deserves some more flowers than what he's actually gotten on the internet. To put that car seventh is a really impressive job that I don't think many people have actually talked about, which I think is a bit of a shame for him. Row two, we have the aforementioned Felix Rosenqvist, who, again, dropped a whole mile an hour on that final run. Santino Ferrucci in the middle, trying to become the first man to finish in the top 10 for these first 8 consecutive attempts at the Speedway. And Pato O'Ward, it's a powerhouse row two. The problem is that Pato O'Ward, we don't know what the backup tub is going to be able to do.
Yeah.
And, well, if nothing else, and I said this about Long Beach earlier on the year, I said that's the best Felix has looked in an IndyCar in his career. He's got a car that can win this race.
Yeah,
and I've said that before about Felix. Is this the year that Felix finally puts it all together?
Yeah, this is a row of just the most notorious, really quick, nearly men in recent history of the Indianapolis 500.
That's perfect.
All three of them have had close calls with victory, but they've never got the number one spot. But they are, like, among the top 10 quickest drivers at the Speedway every year that they show up. Santino Ferrucci has the streak. It's ongoing. He's never finished outside the top 10 in this race. And sometimes that was with some really, really bad or underfunded teams.
Podium finisher as well.
Yeah, podium finisher in this event. Pato O'Ward, we know what happened in 2024.
Podium finisher.
yeah. Pato O'Ward, if he wins, it will be one of the most overwhelming crowd reactions. But again, we don't know what the backup car is going to be like. And the primary car just didn't look all that happy when he did his fast sits run. I'll just put it that way. Felix Rosenqvist saved his career in 2022 with a good run at the Indianapolis 500, because this 2021 season McLaren was so bad that they were trying to move on from him in the middle of 2022 and try and replace him with Alex Palou and try and shuffle him off to like Formula E or something. He was so good that he just ended up like not being able to be fired just yet. And he's parlayed that into a role with Meyer-Shank Racing, where he's come so close to another win. I can't believe he's not won a race since 2020. Surely it has to change.
Surely. I mean, let's put it to you this way. If Pato wins, there will be a track invasion. I'm not joking. There will be a track invasion, because we all know how these fans feel about Pato. In fact, I've joked about it before in the style of Bakura from Yu-Gi-Oh! The Abridged series. Tell my fangirls I love them. If Pato wins, we're never going to hear the end of it. For Santino,
what gets a bigger reaction, Pato winning or Connor winning?
Oh, locally, Connor.
Connor, internationally, Pato.
Yeah. Like, on the internet, it will be Pato. Like, IndyCar Twitter, Tumblr, fucking Mastodon will all be burning.
Yeah, like, because Pato O'Ward has got a huge, obviously, huge following, huge Mexican following. He's got more Instagram followers than the series itself does on Instagram. He's a McLaren driver. And McLaren go nuts over their drivers, all of them. Look at these little wholesome little twinks, et cetera. You know, but Pato would be one of theirs. If he wins, we're never going to hear the end of it. It's going to be like Oscar Piastri won the championship last year in F1. I don't think he's ready for that.
If Connor wins, it's going to be deep fried treasure map and mug and bun root beer for all.
He might usurp Tyrese Halliburton as patron king of the state of Indiana.
He will have a permanent chair at IndyCar Exchange. I can almost guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah. but the Hardy is going to Superman pose out of the media center window and attempt to fly.
Deep pocket Connor. Hey, he's going to have some deep pockets to fill all the money if he wins that race, which then leads us to our front row of the outside, David Malukas and his first 500 start for Penske. Alexander Rossi, will he be 100%? When it's time to go racing, will his backup car be 100% when it's time to go racing for the driver that shockingly won this race 10 years ago? Every time he's come back since, the prospect of another win has become less of a shock. And then, of course, the pole man, Alex Palou, trying to go back to back for the first time since Newgarden.
It's a powerhouse front row. I've said before, this is exactly why Roger Penske brought in David Malukas, even though a good few people in IndyCar, me being one of them, thought this was too soon. Nope, this is exactly why they hired him. He's the real goddamn deal. There is no reason why David Malukas can't win this race. Super talent, and we all know that ovals has been his bread and butter from day one.
Yeah,
this was the opportunity he was denied last year when he was a McLaren driver. This is he is going to be right in the thick of this action.
The front row is the all McLaren rejects, as I've seen a few people coin it.
Some people rejected McLaren, and others had McLaren reject them because they didn't want to wait for his wrist to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly.
Got to hand it to him.
Best ever start at the 500 for Alex Rossi. Again, the only question is how healthy is he going to be and how's his backup car going? It's a real shame that that happened to him on Monday because that was a very quick car. And this was somewhere in a graveyard, there is a coffin that reads Alex Rossi's prime of 2018 and 2019. And the coffin rattled ever so slightly when he qualified that car in second. For a second there, I thought was emitting a pulse again. Not quite. Not yet, anyway. We'll have to wait and see. And Alex Palou is him. What more do you need me to say about Alex Palou at this point?
He was Better's favorite going into the event, and that was before time trials completed. So I can imagine that the odds have only gotten... You will win less money if you bet on Alex Palou now than if you would have if you wagered on him before the start of time trials.
3-1 so in the UK to win it now outright, which is
insane.
Disgustingly short odds for a 500-mile oval race. There's your grid. For the 110th running of the Indy 500 this weekend in full. Now, welcome to what we call the pick amnesty, because we made our original IndyCar picks at the start of the season because I'm a generous soul and because we now know what the grid looks like. I'm offering new people the unique chance to have an amnesty. So you, and me included, has the chance to re-pick your selections specifically for the 500 in this occasion. So, first of all, the first question on the list here. Who's the best finisher from row 11? Is it going to be Stingray Rob, Collette, or Jack Harvey?
Kyle Collette, and it's not even close.
The hardest?
Jack Harvey, just to be different.
Jack Harvey, because I've got to follow my fellow trading card collector. Give me the man from Lincoln Town.
This is the strongest endorsement you've ever made of a Liverpool supporter.
The bar is low.
Here's the thing. Harvey's got a lot of experience several years of experience at the 500, and Jayon Reinbold, they make good cars. Harvey's going to have a good car for the race.
This is going to be a fun one. This is going to be a fun category coming up here.
If I may, real quick, can we do the reverse of that?
Like the lowest finisher from row one?
Yes.
Probably Rossi on betting form. I just don't know what the backup car is going to be like.
Lowest finisher from row one.
Alex Rossi.
Yeah, I'd probably say Alex Rossi.
Yeah, I'm Rossi on that one as well.
Cam?
I said Alex Rossi.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling. Remember what happened the last time I said that?
You're going to torpedo all my hopes and dreams again.
I'm going to say I have a weird feeling. I'm going to say Palou is going to be the worst finisher of the top three front row.
Here we go again. The Hardy bringing his cursed energy and a cold with him to the speedway. Clearly, Here's a fun one for you. Let's play a guessing game. How many miles does Catherine Legg complete on Sunday? A possible 1,100, potentially here. Does she actually pull a full of 1,100 miles? If not, how close do you think she gets?
I think
100-mile increments.
My first question for that is, what's the weather forecast for Sunday?
The weather forecast for Sunday is very minor chances of rain that are only getting less and less likely as the week goes on. I know Legg is going to prioritize the World 600 if it comes first. Here's what I think. I don't think she's going to finish on the lead lap of either one, but she's going to get to the checkered flag in both races regardless, and that's going to be huge in itself. I don't give a crap where it is on the running order. If you finish both races, that's huge.
It's massive. I'm going to say 1,080 miles. I think there might be some kind of incident, or she ends up two or three laps down in the NASCAR race. I think she might be a lap or two down in the 500 because the car is okay, but it's not going to be a contender. There's a reasonable chance she ends up a lap or two down, depending on number of cautions and things like that. So I'm going to say 1,080.
1,075 for me.
Cam's going to say $1.
I'm going to go with Dre on this one. I think about 1,000. I think you'll get to the checkered flag in both, but not on the lead lap of either.
I'm going to say I was going to do like 100-mile increment. I was going to say she's going to complete between 800 and 900 miles because she's going to get caught up in an accident late in the going in the 600. I think she's going to finish probably three laps down at Indy, but I think she's going to be involved in something that's not going to be her fault in Charlotte.
That's a very fair point. That can very easily happen. So stick 850 in for Chris there, Jason. I know you're listening in, and stick one for Cam because he's a coward.
What are you talking about? I agreed with you.
Fair enough.
1080 it is.
1080 it is. Rookie of the year.
Given that it's a subjective award, as we all know,
Listen to Jennifer Fry's not voting on it this year.
Hey, she's just not as a member of the Associated Press, because even the Associated Press is not immune from doing bullshit cutbacks. I think there's a possibility that Mick Schumacher could squeak through a top 12 result and win Rookie of the Year that way.
I'm an emotional person. I cannot help it. I am always going to pick Mick Schumacher. I am a Schumacher fan at heart, and I can't not pick him. Give me Mick Schumacher.
I want to pick Mick so badly on this because I think he's actually coming to his own here. But Collette, with how well he did in qualifying and the fact that team still has a Penske link to it, I think Collette's going to go finish higher than Mick and become Rookie of the Year that way. So I'm going to say Kyle Collette.
The best of the part-timers.
Dre, you picked
Connor
Ryan
Daly.
Hunter. So Chris picked Connor Daly. Dre, you picked Ryan Hunter Ray originally. Do you want amnesty?
No.
You're sticking with Ray?
I'll stick with Hunter Ray. I think experience will prevail.
Connor, Cam, you also picked Hunter Ray. You still like it?
Pivot me to one Takuma Sato.
Oh, doggone it. Because I'm sticking with Sato as well.
Love Takuma. He knows plenty on how to get around this place.
We are fading Elio Castroneves.
We are forgetting about Elio Castroneves, but I haven't seen much out of the non-Felix Shanks. What I will say about Sato, his cars look very good in race trim.
It does. Okay. The big one, the final question. Your winner of the 110th run of the Indianapolis 500 is...
Chris.
As much as I hate the paint scheme on this car and who is on it, I have to look at Felix Rosenquist because he had a pure rocket ship throughout qualifying. He has looked great in practice, And I think this is probably his best shot to win the race. If we're allowed a dark horse pick, it'll be Connor. But my main pick overall, I'm going to have to go with Felix on this.
Right.
Don't pick dark horses. Dark horses are for cowards.
I say nay.
Of course you do.
Aw, dude. Cam, there's no point in asking if you want amnesty. No, because
below. Next question.
All right.
What?
So now it's on me.
As if I'm going to be less confident after having a terrific car in race trim and the question mark was qualifying, and then he go punch that thing on pole.
Let's not waste anybody's time here. RJ, who are you picking?
I went with Willpower because I felt like this would be just an emotional, like, full circle moment for him to win his first race in the Indy 500 after leaving Penske or being cut from Penske, however you want to interpret it. Regardless, I don't feel as confident in Willpower to win the race. I know we got some Willpower supporters here who listen to the podcast or friends of the podcast. They'll be very upset with me saying that. But spiritually, David Malukas might do it. David Malukas might get his first IndyCar win. It might be at the Indianapolis 500 in his first season for Roger Penske. I think I'm going to go with David Malukas.
Very tempting.
Very understandable.
I originally picked Pato. If there's one person who deserves an amnesty here, quite frankly, it's me. And I wouldn't normally say that, but in this occasion, I am, and I don't care what you fuckers tell me. Now, I originally picked Pato. There's too much in that busted tub for me to keep that pick. I would love to keep it, but I'm just not convinced. We've seen it too many times over the years. The backup car just isn't as good. It's annoying because two contenders, I think, are going to be knocked out of the running purely because of that practice crash, because Alex Rossi would have been very tempting as well.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever backed the favorite on any of these occasions until now. Give me Alex Palou to go back to back. I'm standing with Cameron Buckley.
You just on almost called me Cam DeHardy.
He almost did.
Don't you ever insult me like that ever again.
Give me Alex Palou. Right, damn it.
Well, look, provided the race starts and the car is still going, it can only be better than last year.
Yeah, that's possibly true. As for the Weenie 500, which will be wrapped up by the time this is completed, give me the New York dog, because the New York City hot dog is the gold standard of all hot dogs.
Hashtag anyone but slaw dog. Fuck coleslaw.
It's not even coleslaw that they put on it.
Well, then why did they call it the slaw dog then?
Because there are different varieties of slaw besides coal.
That is terrible.
Slaw here.
Indeed. Dreadful.
You could just pick the Chicago dog.
No, I'm not here for slaw dog, but I am here for large weenies, apparently. And turns out we found out from Kevin Lee today that they will also run in the wet, if need be, on Friday. We have rain tires for the Weenie 500.
The Oscar Mayer with Weenie Mobile runs into the rain than F1 can. Checkmate, F1 fans.
Indeed. Well, that's on Club Day. Be there
Seattle
and watch
dog,
it.
By the it's, way, for me.
The dangerous element of this is knowing the fact that Will Buxton has a book of 50 hot dog related jokes already in the chamber, ready to go, and it is going to be delightfully cringe. Be there on Club Day for it. Be there on Sunday for what we call the Day of Classics over here at Motorsport 101. Huge day of racing. We got Super Formula in the morning. We've got our friend of the show, Jen Sabota, in the commentary box as well. You'll love to see
Fuck
that.
Yeah.
Hell to the yes on that. We have the Indy 500. We have the Canadian Grand Prix pretty much right afterwards in Formula 1 as well. You since we're getting spoilt this weekend. One of the best F1 rounds on the calendar right after the Indy 500. I love Canada. I love Montreal. It's my favorite Grand Prix of the year.
It's so much better than Monaco. Cry on it.
Absolutely. Give me Montreal over Monaco every single time. And of course, we have the Coke 600 right after that as well. It's a huge, probably the biggest single day of motorsport in 2026. And we're all going to be there for it, and we're going to review it all next week here on Motorsport 101. But of course, headlining the billing will be the 110th running of the Indy 500. Will Alex Palou go back to back? He is the bookies' favorite. He is the podcast favorite. Let's see if he can do a New Garden and go back to back. Until then, and until next time, I'm Andre Harrison. They've been Cam the Hardy, not Chris the Hardy, and Andre O'Connell. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you guys next week. Sayonara.
And they're waving it off, race fans. They're waving off Cam the Hardy. They're waving it off.
So there's this kid from Super Formula. I think you guys should look into him.
Again, Cam?
Yes.
Another one.